So as I mentioned before, we've been looking at, in the book of 1 Samuel at the kings, and we've discussed Saul and some of the things that happened with him. And now we've gotten into a discussion of the transition from King Saul to King David. And so that's where we are. In our last study, as I mentioned before, we looked at chapter 17 and took some time to dig deep into that passage there with David and his standing up for God there and defeating Goliath. And so tonight we're going to move forward in this study. I don't know that I'll get to all these, but we're going to move forward. We're going to see what the aftermath was of that. Because what will happen as a result of that will have long-lasting effects on the kingdom itself. King Saul, as we go on, and we will notice how he becomes jealous of David, of his popularity with the people. We'll also notice there how David is given the daughter of Saul, Michal, how he marries her. King Saul then attempts to assassinate David, and then David flees. Well, Jonathan gets involved. He discovers that Saul is seeking to kill David and warns David to flee. And a large portion of what follows is the flight of David away from Saul and Saul pursuing David. And so that's we'll get into that discussion. We'll see how Saul puts to death the priest, it should be plural, the priest of Nob. And finally how David saves the people of Keilah from the hand of the Philistines. And I don't know if we'll get that far, but that's what we're going to try to do in this study. Sorry for the small print. A lot of points. So, but this will be online afterwards if you need to go back. But we'll also note it as we go. So, in our last study, we looked at the battle of David and Goliath. And now, what happened as a result of that? Let's dig into the text here. As we notice King Saul's reaction to all of this. Let's go to 1 Kings 18. One of the important relationships to David is his relationship with Jonathan and how close they were and how Jonathan really sought to protect David even against his own father. If you go to 1 Samuel chapter 18, 1 following, it says, "As soon as he had finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own flesh. And Saul took him that day and would not let him return to his father's house. Then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as his own soul." And so you get a picture from the writer of 1 Samuel about the kinship between David and Jonathan. You also notice here that prior to chapter 18, David was allowed to travel back and forth from his father's home to the court and then back to help with his father's farm with the sheep, and then he would return and serve Saul. Well, after the events of 17, he's no longer allowed to do that. So King Saul keeps him in his service full time. As we go on in verse 5, the text goes on to say, "And David went out and was successful wherever Saul sent him." Now we noted earlier that one of the significant things that happened, when Saul lost God's favor, what does it say about the Spirit of God and Saul?
It left him,
right? That God, in essence, what he's saying to us is twofold. Number one, the approval of God left Saul, and God's help through the Holy Spirit left Saul. Now, how was the Holy Spirit helping Saul exactly? We're not told that, right? God's not very specific about that, but in some way, he was helping Saul. Well, when the Spirit left him, no longer was he receiving that providential aid from God. Well, the Spirit would later go to David. And as the text notes here, David was successful. One of the reasons, I believe, is because the Spirit of the Lord was with him in whatever venture he took on. I can't help but think about Joseph, right? Despite all of his difficulties with Potiphar's wife and what she did, what his brothers did to him, what Potiphar's wife did to him, all along the way, getting in prison and then rising up to second in all of Egypt. Well, that was God's providential care. And so it says, so that Saul, continuing in verse 5, so that Saul set him over the men of war. So now he's going to send him out to battle. Now, one of the things we noticed in 17 is that David is a young man. You remember in the comparison between David and Goliath, what was one of the things Saul pointed to as the reason David couldn't defeat Goliath? Well, he says, you're a young man, but here's Goliath. He's been a warrior since his youth, right? So David, up until this point, hasn't really been what you label a warrior, right? But now Saul is going to give him that experience. And at first, it seems good-hearted. We'll note that will change later. And this was good in the sight of all the people and also in the sight of Saul's servants. So everybody likes David. His popularity is growing. He has a good relationship with all the people around him. All right, go to verses 6 and 7. And as they were coming home, when David returned from striking down the Philistine, talking about Goliath, the women came out of all the cities of Israel singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tambourines, with songs of joy, with musical instruments. And the women sang to one another as they celebrated. All right, before we get into what they're singing, you know, this is something Saul is used to, right? Whenever he comes into a town or a place after a victory, the people receive him, glorify him, and all these things. But notice the change here. Saul definitely will notice it. What are they singing? Saul has struck down his thousands, and David his 10,000s. Now, has David struck down 10,000? No, it's not little, right? What's the emphasis here, though? It's like an old fish story, right? The fish would catch is about that big. By the time you tell everybody, it's a whale, right? Well, his persona among the people is growing, right? And he's becoming a legend. You may remember, anybody ever see Braveheart? A few people seen Braveheart, right? What the legend, how his legend grew, and people told all kinds of stories, and he kind of became mythical to the people. Well, David is growing in popularity. Well, the people react very well to David. That's not Saul's reaction. We go on to verses 8 and 9. Somebody read 8 and 9.
And Saul was very wroth, and the saying displeased him. And he said, they have ascribed unto David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed but thousands. And what can he have more but the kingdom? And Saul eyed David from that day forward.
All right, so something goes in his head. He sees what's going on. And how does he react? Well, he becomes, number one, suspicious. And I think that the end of verse 8 is kind of key. What is he saying there about David? Notice the end of that question. And this is going to come back later. What was it? What's he saying? Yeah, so Saul is not only angry, but he's jealous. And now he's becoming fearful of what David's potential could be. And that'll be important as we move along. And he'll bring that back up when he talks to Jonathan. And so he says, what more can he have but the kingdom? And so now David has gained the attention of Saul, and not in a good way. All right, going down to verse 10, I promise we won't read the whole chapter, but I'm trying to get the whole context here. But let's go on down to verse 10. It says there, the next day, a harmful spirit from God rushed upon Saul. And he raved within his house while David was playing the lyre, as he did day by day. What's significant about that? Do you notice a change here? What was David originally brought to the court for? What was his purpose?
Soothe Saul.
To soothe Saul when these fits would come on him. Whatever it is, whether it's a demon or a physical, mental condition, whatever it is, when those would occur, David would begin to play that instrument and it would calm him down. But what do you notice here? It's not working anymore. And the end of that tells us that Saul had his spear in his hand, and Saul hurled the spear, for he thought, I will pin David to the wall. He's just going to take him out right there in the court. And he's going to pin him to the wall with it. He had every intention of murdering him right there in front of everybody. This fit of anger and rage is so overpowering Saul he's just acting, right? He's just reacting to the situation. It says, but David evaded him twice. He didn't throw one spear. He's thrown two so far. There'll be more to come. And at other people. So he picks up the spear and just hurls it. Now, how would you react if you're David? You'd be fearful, right? He's trying to kill me. You'd also probably be confused. Why is he killing me? What have I done to deserve this? And so verse 12 says, but it's interesting, what was the real motivating factor for Saul? Verse 12. And so Saul can even see that at this point. He can see that that's changed. And it's not just anger driving him, but it's fear. And so he hurls this at him. And so verse 13 says, so Saul removed him, David, from his presence and made him a commander of thousands. And he went out and came in before the people. And so Saul, I guess, no longer can look at David. And he's also got another ulterior plan we'll get into in just a minute. But he's like, get him out of here. So he sends him out, back out into the field, right, for battle. And so you go down to verse 14, you keep reading there. And it says, and David had success in all his undertakings, for the Lord was with him. That note that again, right? God is with him. And when Saul saw that he had great success, he stood in fearful awe of him. But all Israel and Judah loved David, for he went out and came in before them. And so now he's standing in fearful awe. He's wondering, what can I do to destroy this man? How can I get him away from me? And even he is standing in awe of David and what God is doing through him.
He didn't seem to recognize the heart that David had for God's the respect, because Saul was God's anointed, and he wasn't trying to take the place. He was actually serving him because he respected the position that Saul had as God's anointed leader. And it seems like Saul missed that. He was just jealous of it. Instead of being led to repentance, to a submission kind of thing by his relationship with God compared to David's, he just got jealous of his position. He was worried about losing his position, which David had no desire for at the time at all, from what I can see.
Yeah, and it's it seems like to me that the more things go on, it's like Saul gets deeper and deeper into the darkness, right? He gives himself more over to those most basest evil intentions, right? He is becoming more corrupted. And like you say, David never had any intention of ever usurping him. Right? What happens to Saul? God has already pronounced judgment on him. But it's interesting that Saul kind of brings it on himself. God's just being prophetic, right? Announcing judgment, right? But Saul actually leads himself into the trouble. It's kind of like we do that, right? Do we ever like lead ourselves into trouble and we just make things worse? You know, it's kind of like the fly caught in the spider's web. What happens? The more the fly struggles, the more caught up he gets. Or it's like, I was going to tell the python one, but my wife won't like that one. She don't like snakes. But, you know, like when you're, like when the python has you, the more you struggle, the more he binds you, right? It's like the fly in the net or in the web. Like, the more he struggles, it's just the more he's getting caught up. Well, like you say, Saul just never repents. Like, there's a time in all of our lives when we just need to say to ourselves, stop. You know, we're making it worse. That may mean that we need to make confession about something. We need to own up to something. We need to seek help. Right? You think about people who are stuck in some kind of evil practice in their life. Whatever that is, you fill in the blank. Right? Why does it take so long for people to get out of those bad situations?
Because it's easy to be your own worst enemy.
Mm-hmm. And the further you get, the more you feel trapped, the more you feel like you have to get yourself out. I was reading, I was actually listening to somebody discussing what happened to a young man, very intelligent young man, very good kid who was in college and he was home for a little while and he got started into trading online. I don't know if you ever heard of the Robinhood app. Robinhood app kind of allows people's ease of access to stock trading, and it has some protections in it that protect people who are kind of naive to things or don't understand it really well. There's some protections, but there's also a side, and this is one of the things they get into in discussing what happened to this young man, but there's a side of Robinhood that if you get into access into it, you make yourself very liable for you can win really big, but you can lose lots of money. And this kid got himself into some trouble. And rather than going to his parents and confessing what had happened, because really he'd done nothing wrong, he ended up taking his own life. You know, and it's such a sad, tragic story of a young man who got himself into a place he just saw no way out of it. You know, we need to always understand there's always help. There's always help if we will just seek it out. And you don't have to go it alone. And so Saul is just mired in the stew of his own making, and he's making it worse, and it just will get worse and worse for him. And so he's going to begin to plot ways to get rid of David. All right, so his first plot happens with his own daughter, Michal. If you go to chapter 18, verse 20, the text tells us, now Saul's daughter, Michal, loved David, and they told Saul, and the thing pleased him. Why? Verse 21, Saul thought, let me give her to him, that she may be a snare for him, and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. Therefore Saul said to David a second time, you shall be my son-in-law. Now on the surface, you might ask, this maybe doesn't make sense. What is he talking about, that the Philistines will be against him? I mean, he's a Jew anyway, isn't he? What is he talking about here? What's his plan? Did you catch it?
Send David
like Uriah
Who were the...
With Michael in the house, I mean, he's expecting his daughter to be a snitch, a spy or whatever too.
Yeah.
A snare to him, so he might be expecting her to report to him about his plan.
All that may be true. I think what's going on here is, from a Philistine perspective, who is their most hated enemy? Well, it's Saul. By marrying Michal, essentially what is going to happen to David? He's now going to become the son-in-law of Saul. He's going to be a part of the royal family. Now, I don't know what Saul's ultimate plan was here, but in some way he thought that by making him his son-in-law, that would put an extra target on the back of David, that they would want to kill him even more. Now, he's already sending him to the front lines to be killed by the Philistines, and he'll continue to hope that's going to happen. But now when the Philistines see him, it won't just be a soldier commander of the Israelites. Oh, that's the son-in-law of the king. Let's kill him, right? And I believe that's what Saul's intention here is. I don't know if it's the most well thought out plan, but that seems to me to be what he's trying to do. He wants to put that target on the back of David. So verse 25, after a little bit of back and forth, he convinces David, and notice what he does. So David says, I don't have any money to pay, the dowry, right? The dowry that would be put forward to the father-in-law, the father of the bride. Well, Saul says, I don't want that. Notice what he wants. Verse 25, he says, then Saul said, thus shall you say to David, the king desires no bride price, except 100 foreskins of the Philistines, that he may be avenged of the king's enemy. Now Saul thought to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines. So he believes he's going to make David act rashly and end up getting himself killed by going and attacking the Philistines. So that's what he's thinking. This is how I'm going to do it. He's going to go to his own death. Well, what happens? You go on down to verse 27. It says, David arose and went along with his men and killed 200 of the Philistines. How many did he ask for? 100. I'll get 200. And David brought their foreskins, which were given in full number to the king, that he might become the king's son-in-law. And Saul gave him his daughter Michal for a wife, but when Saul saw that... That's tough to read sometimes, Saul. I feel like you're making a mistake. And Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David and that Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him. Saul was even more afraid of David. So Saul was David's enemy continually. And so David goes out, he kills not 100, but 200. I'm sure that only stoked Saul's anger even more, the fact that here I had this trap laid for you and you're going to walk right into it. They're going to kill you. And he didn't just kill 100. He comes back with 200. So it's almost like putting coal in the fire of the anger of Saul, right? And so he ends in verse 29 by saying that Saul was, Saul was David's enemy continually. Not meaning from David's perspective, but from the perspective of Saul, he saw David as his enemy. All right, so we move on to the next section here. And so now Saul is going to become even more aggressive in his attempt to assassinate David. So we'll go on in chapter 19. And I'm going to move through these kind of quickly, but stop me if you need to ask questions. Somebody read verses 1 through 3, please.
Guard in the morning. Stay in a secret place and hide yourself. and I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where you are, and I will speak to my father about you, and if I learn anything, I will tell you.
So Saul, now he's got to figure out a new way to do it. So he pulls in Jonathan, his son, and some other servants, or some servants as well. And he lets them know, we're going to find a way to kill him. So Jonathan, because of his concern for David, goes to David and says, okay, he's going to try to kill you. I want you to go out and hide, and then me and my father are going to come out there, and we're going to find out what his real intentions for you are. So he's really working behind the scenes covertly as a spy for David, and that will continue on. As you continue reading, we won't read the whole context there, but Jonathan eventually convinces his father Saul to not kill David, and so David is brought back into the presence of Saul. So you remember after, they were up there together and he throws the spear at David, he then sends David away. So David hasn't been back in the presence, in Saul's presence for a while. Don't know exactly how long, but for a while he hasn't been around. Well, Jonathan convinces Saul to bring him back, to not kill him, to bring him back in. And so as you go on reading, go down to verse 9 of 19, what happens? Well, again, a harmful spirit from the Lord came upon Saul as he sat in his house with his spear in his hand. Not a good combination. Saul loves that spear. And David was playing the lyre. And Saul sought to pin David to the wall with the spear. But he eluded Saul, now for the third time, so that he struck the spear into the wall. And David fled and escaped that night. So again, he's there. He throws it so hard, now it's stuck into the wall. And David, of course, is fleeing out of the presence. Now, what is David thinking all this time? Does he know what's going on with Saul? I think he's very innocent to any of this. He doesn't understand why he's being killed, or Saul to be killed. And I'm sure he's like, man, I don't know what's going on. And so he runs away. And it's Michael who's going to save David this time. Verse 11, Saul sent messengers to David's house to watch him, that he might kill him in the morning. But Michael, David's wife, told him, if you do not escape with your life tonight, tomorrow you will be killed. Verse 18 goes on to tell us, David fled and escaped and came to Samuel at Ramah, and told him all that Saul had done, and he and Samuel went and lived in Naoth. And so thus is going to kind of begin the travels, the flight of David away from Saul. He's going to kind of continually be on the run, and Saul's going to be after him every place he goes. Now he's went to Samuel. You know, Jonathan couldn't fix it. Well, David couldn't fix it. Jonathan couldn't fix it. Michael couldn't fix it. So now he's going to Samuel. Maybe Samuel can be the one to fix this. If anybody, it's Samuel, right? Samuel's got this relationship with Saul. Maybe he can talk to him and convince him not to do this that's going on. Any questions up to this point?
Samuel had really quit on Saul, though, hadn't he?
What now?
Saul didn't do what God said, Samuel sort of quit on him. So Samuel really hadn't been in a relationship with Saul very much.
And it had probably been a while since all that happened.
Basically, hey, you're not following God's ways, or it's God's prophet. Samuel sort of gave up on him, if you will. He didn't. So no one was really going on with Saul. And sort of hard to think that Samuel really understood where his heart was right now, other than the fact he knew he was away from God.
Mm-hmm. Last time Samuel had seen Saul was after Saul had let the king live, right, and had had kept all those things he shouldn't have. And text tells us after Samuel kills the king in a very vicious way, he leaves. He's not going to be there for Saul any longer. All right, so we move on into chapter 20. And Jonathan is again going to help David again. If you go to chapter 20, somebody read those first four verses, please.
Then David fled from Joab in Ramah and went and said to Jonathan, "What have I done? What is my iniquity and what is my sin before your father that he seeks my life?" So Jonathan said to him, "By no means, you shall not die. Indeed, my father will do nothing, either great or small, without first telling me. And why should my father hide this thing from me? It is not so." Then David took an oath and said, "Your father certainly knows that I have found favor in your eyes, and he has said, 'Do not let Jonathan know this, lest he be grieved.' But truly, as the Lord lives, and as your soul lives, there is but a step between me and death." So Jonathan said to David, "Whatever you yourself desire, I will do it for you."
All right, so I think it's kind of interesting. Jonathan, for some reason, is not convinced that Saul is really seeking to kill him. I don't really understand that after everything has happened. But he again says here, I'll do whatever I need to. This isn't going to happen. You go down later, skim way down to verse 27. And after they have some discussion about how to discover what's truly going on, that Jonathan tells David to go out in this field, you hide in that field, and they have the new moon festival, and if my father's welcoming, I'll let you know and you can come back. However, if he's not, then I'll let you know. And so the first 2 days pass. In verse 27, it says, those first two, he says nothing about David. But on the second day, the day after the new moon, David's place is empty. And Saul, I'm sorry, one day passes, and on the second day, he brings this up. And Saul said to Jonathan, his son, "Why has not the son of Jesse come to the meal, either yesterday or today?" So where is he? Now Saul had been plotting to, again, try to kill David, and so he was wanting him to be here so that he could do that very thing. Well, he's not. Well, again, Jonathan is like, "You don't need to kill him. Why are you trying to do harm to him?" Verse 30, you notice the reaction of Saul again. Verse 30 tells us, "Then Saul's anger was kindled against Jonathan." Okay, notice where it's turning now. Maybe his eyes are finally opened up to the fact that Jonathan is protecting David. And it says he is angry. Well, again, Saul and spears don't go well together. And he said to him, "You son of a perverse, rebellious woman." Now, why would he condemn his mom? Oh, that's funny. No, thank you, Ms. Florence, for laughing. Yeah, that's what he's talking about, Jonathan's mom. Never mind. I thought that was funny. So he says, "You son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do I not know that you have chosen the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse lives on the earth, neither you nor your kingdom shall be established." Now you remember what we said earlier. Why was he afraid of David? He said, what was that?
God's with him.
He was concerned about that kingdom.
About the kingdom. Remember what he said? He said, "What more can David get than the kingdom?" And so he was afraid of that. And notice what he's saying to Jonathan. He's saying, "Jonathan, don't you understand that he's going to take your kingdom away from you?" And therefore send and bring him to me, for he shall surely die. So he's just saying it out right now. Verse 32, then Jonathan answered Saul his father, why should he be put to death? What has he done? So again, defending him. But Saul hurled his spear at him to strike him. So Jonathan knew that his father was determined to put David to death. So now he's throwing his spear at his own son. All right, he is an uncontrollable force at this point. He is just so pitted with rage.
Yes, ma'am. After four spears, they quit giving him.
That's true. He's not the best spear thrower.
Fortunately.
Yeah. This is number four, right? Number four.
He seems so extremely impulsive. Mm-hmm. So extremely. So in one moment, he was like, they're going to take the kingdom from you. But on the other hand, you're trying to kill your own son that the kingdom could possibly belong to.
Yeah, which says he doesn't really care about Jonathan's kingdom. He's worried about himself. Just being truthful here. So he tries to kill Jonathan. Verse 42, Jonathan goes out. He shoots the arrow, and David knows that it's unsafe. Verse 42, Jonathan said to David, go in peace, because you have sworn both to us in the name of the Lord, saying, the Lord shall be between you, me and you, and between you, my offspring and your offspring forever. He rose and departed, and Jonathan went into the city. And so he's basically telling him, go. Get away. Don't come back. You need to get away from here.
Dad's not rational these days.
Yeah. He's not. And so David does that very thing. You go into chapter 21. David flees to Nob. Or Nob. It says, then David came to Nob, to Ahimelech, the priest. And Ahimelech came to David trembling and said to him, why are you alone and no one with you? And David said to Ahimelech, the priest, the king has charged me with a matter and said to me, let no one know anything of the matter about which I send you and with which I've charged you. I have made an appointment with the young men for such and such a place. So David begins his final... Sorry, I didn't move it forward there for you. But there in verses 1 and 2, he then travels to Nob. He tells Ahimelech a little bit of a fib here. To cover for himself, not a little bit, a lie, right? So we'll dig more into this as we go forward, but this is a map of the travels. It's kind of a whole lot of lines on there, but we'll dig more into that next week. But you'll notice that right here is Nob. That's where David is now. He was here in Ramah with Samuel, and then now has fled to Nob. And so that's where he is with Ahimelech. And he will move around quite a bit. You can see all the different lines of different travels that he made along the way. So he's going to have to move around a lot. Saul is going to pursue him heavily as he does so. Next week, we'll go on into 21. We will see how Ahimelech protects David, which will eventually lead to Ahimelech and the other priests of Nob being murdered by Saul. Any questions or comments?
Will you talk about that evil spirit of the Lord that comes on Saul?
Okay. Can I do that next week? Because that's a little deeper topic than I have in the 2 minutes we have left.
Will you explain next week when God tells Saul, before you were born, I knew you?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember where that is, but...
Yeah, what's up?
Yeah, good questions. Is it a little deeper? Let me have a little bit more time with those.
Psalms 139, that's the one that says that, that you know me before I wake up. You know what I'm doing all the time? Yes, Psalms 139. And I guess David wrote that psalm.
Yeah, and that's a discussion of David. You were talking about Saul, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's the same deal, right?
Yeah, that's when he went before the suicide review.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about early on when he was anointed king?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I don't mean to be short with those, but I'd rather give you time to answer them.
And also, why was it okay for him to eat the showbread. I mean, how did he know it was okay?
I'm not so sure it was okay. I actually don't think it was. And we could go and look at Jesus actually comments on that and how he actually, I believe Jesus is saying basically, because the Pharisees are upset that the disciples are eating this grain when they had the right to do that. They could have done that. Well, Jesus says in commenting back to them, because they were saying they're violating a tradition, right, of the Pharisees. Well, they were uplifting their own teaching up to the teaching of God. When at the same time, they wouldn't condemn David for eating the showbread, which he really shouldn't have eaten. So actually, I think David did sin there. And the high priest really sinned. Good comment. Thank you all. We'll be dismissed. In just a couple minutes, we'll assemble back to do our devotional time. Thank you.